I got you. There we go.
Okay, welcome to Horse Geeks, an experimental podcast to talk about the dynamics and the operating systems and the undercurrents in the horse world. So I am Kirsten Nelson, a professional horse trainer. My program is called Training for Optimal Balance. And Deb Romero, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Deb Romero. I have over 15 years experience as a human body worker. And I'm also a certified Alexander Technique teacher, which deals, I'm a specialist in human movement. So I take that to helping riders with their horses.
Yes. So what we have in common is, and this is what the idea behind the podcast, Horse Geeks, is based on the fact that what Deb and I share in common is wanting to know how things work, looking at the undercurrent, what's going on behind the actions, the problems, the successes, how do things work? And Deb and I have lots of discussions about this, so we thought we would do it and put it out for people to have a look at and hopefully get you to look at your relationship with your horse or how you're going about riding in maybe a new way. So today's topic is about students and teachers. And students and teachers as a dynamic relationship and almost a cyclical relationship. So what we're hoping to sort of cover in this particular conversation are looking at the dynamics between a what we call a student-teacher relationship, how to find the right teacher as a student, and how to find the right students as a teacher. And then finally, looking at our relationship with our own horses, the ones we ride the most, as a student-teacher relationship. So thinking of our horses as a student when we're training, rather than looking for obedience or submission, but actually educating our horses, trusting their intelligence, and turning, having that cyclical relationship with our horses, where if what we're doing isn't working, maybe the horse is the teacher and we need to be the student. So in talking about the dynamics, what brought this up was a great story Deb has. We've both been riding horses a long time. And one of the things we laugh about is that, I don't know, in 30, 40 years, the language of a lot of riding instructors just has not changed. It doesn't always make sense to the student, but the language doesn't change. So Deb, I'm gonna let you start off with that and talk about what you were telling me about the conversation.
Yeah, I was at a, I was just invited to a dinner with several of the local instructors in my area and an FEI level dressage instructor. And the conversation was going around, they couldn't get their students. They kept repeating the same thing and repeating the same instructions. And the student, they felt, was not doing the necessary things to suit that. So I opened my mouth and I said, well, have you ever thought that you need to change the way you're saying that to get it across to the student? And the whole room just went totally silent.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, wow, okay. But that's what I saw in my third year as an Alexander student. I went around to a lot of the local instructors and just listened. And I've been riding over 50 years now. So I don't feel there are that many instructors that have changed their language or their level of communication in that time. I'm still hearing the same language I heard when I was 6 years old.
And what are some examples of that? from your perspective, like what are the things that you still hear, but in your mind you go, what does that really mean?
Yeah. Well, of course, heels down, I think, is the biggest The biggest ones, and I've been trying to wrap my head around that as an Alexander teacher. And Kirsten, we've talked about this. So I was trying to think as a instructor, why am I saying that? What do I see in the rider that I'm asking for that? And as an Alexander teacher, and we've talked about this, is the perspective of some riders lose their relationship with gravity when they're up on a horse. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's, I don't even know why that saying started, but I'm wondering if that is the true, you know, that they're seeing the rider is getting too top heavy, or, you know, over too much in front of the horse, or whatever. But I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. And my theory is that the phrase heels down makes a lot of sense for a human who's on a horse for the first time, mm-hmm. where they're going to go a little bit fetal and they're going to clamp in with their legs. Mm-hmm. So the heels down helps them find some stability. But then you go, well, is there ever a time where you could have too much heels down? And that's what I see, because it's so repeated that then we think, well, more equals better. And pretty soon, excessive heels down ends up restricting and locking the rider's hip joint. And they can't do anything with their seat because their heels are down, or you know better than I how it would stress the knee.
Yeah. So if you have a locking anywhere in the body, it's, as we've talked with tensegrity, it just channels it to the entire body. So there's going to be a tensing, a locking. So you can't be a receiver of information at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And have any of us, I know when I started riding, I heard heels down, but I never thought to ask why. How much? Am I doing too much? Am I doing too little? Why do I need my heels down? What does it do? You know, and those were the questions that always came up for me over time. But as a beginner rider, you just go, I guess it's important, so let me try harder.
Am I doing it right?
Yeah, am I doing it right? And also the thing that kills me that I still hear is more leg. Well, what does more leg mean? Do I squeeze harder? Do I pound my legs? Why am I giving more leg? Do I need the horse to go faster? Or, you know, why more leg? And how do I give leg? Because do I use my upper leg? Do I use my lower leg? Do I pinch with my knees? If my heels are down, maybe my calves have lost contact, right? Or if my balance is off, maybe I'm using a part of my leg that's sending a different message to the horse. So instead of looking at the legs as these incredible dynamic tools of communication, it's like heels down, more leg. Well, what do you mean more leg? I've only got this much leg. So how do I use it? What do I do with it? What am I trying to achieve?
Going to grow more leg.
More leg, right?
And I have found when somebody is given a instruction like that, they actually tend to shorten around that instruction. You know, it's very hard to keep everything open and available when you're given a new stimulus like that, or a jump in front of you or whatever. You know, you add a stimulus or a stress, and that level of tension can come in, which can be really confusing to the horse and the rider, for that matter, on what's being communicated.
Right. And make the rider generally pretty stiff.
Yes.
Pretty stiff rather than fluid. Yeah. So like some of the other things I've heard that haven't changed is, and this was my frustration with my first horse. I had ridden for years and I got a horse that was way out of my depth with. Right. So I was taking lessons, doing all of the things that the instructor said, advancing through the lessons, but I had never owned a horse. They were all lesson horses. And I was, you know, a teenager, so I thought I knew everything after 5 years of riding, and promptly went out and got a horse because he was the right color and the right breed. And boy, was he a handful. He was, you know, really way more horse than I was prepared for. And when I went to different instructors and trainers that were in my area, I kept getting the same advice. You're a very good rider, dear. What you need is a different horse. And that kept bothering me because I was like, this is the horse not only that I could afford, I paid for my own horse as a teenager, but it was the horse I was attached to.
Right.
In my mind, he was the perfect horse, but I just needed help because he was too much horse for me at the time. And I just kept getting the same advice that I need a different horse. And I think that's what led me down the path of horse training, because it made me so mad. I was like, I don't want a different horse. I want help with this horse. And it was just, I still hear that. Right. So it made me think about sort of in the student teacher relationship that there's different kinds of trainers and there's different kinds of students. And here I was with my first problem of why doesn't this horse work with me? But I was taking that horse to a salesperson rather than a trainer who specialized in fixing problems, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? Nothing wrong with that, but that was so frustrating to me because I went, I don't want to be sold something new. I want to fix what I have. And that was right. just inside of me, right? It was just inside of me. That was how I was wired. And it got very frustrating because I think there's different types of trainers, different types of students. And when we talk about these dynamics, I think knowing who you are and what you want helps you find the right instructor.
And I think an important part is I know I have completely evolved from what the type of trainers I used when I thought the only thing I wanted was a blue ribbon.
Right.
To the type of teachers, trainers that I work with now that I just want to be, as a teacher, I always want to be a student. So constantly learning from other teachers, because I just, that's how I think, you know, I want to know the whys and the hows, whereas I that's not how I started. So that giving ourselves permission to seek different what styles and levels of teaching and training, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. And I think you said a really important thing. And that's why I think of the student-teacher relationship as cyclical. Rather than kind of a hierarchy, it's more like kind of a yin and yang. It's just this interwoven relationship, but we're always changing roles between student and teacher.
Yeah, I see that representation like of a DNA molecule it's a spiral. It has its ups and downs.
Yeah.
And its turns and go one direction, go another, come back and web like we do. I mean, we've been working together, I think, over 12 years. And we've both, you know, evolved.
You evolve and grow. And grow. It's not against anybody to sort of go, this is me, and this is the type of teacher I need. Or as a teacher, as a working professional, going, these are the kind of students I work very well with, and these are not the students I work as well with, because our agendas are what's important to us are not the same. And in kind of thinking about it, I don't like categories, but I went, okay, so what types of, let's say, horse professionals are there? Right. And I go, I'm definitely in the category of the mechanic. I want to know how things work. I want to know why. I want to know how to hack the operating system. Right. That's why it's called horse geeks, because
yeah.
I know about that operating system, not the software. And I want to know how to hack into that to get it to function better or get done what I want to get done. So I would put myself as a student, the teachers I ended up seeking out and doing the best with thought the same way. And going through natural horsemanship, it was about how the psychology worked, how the horse's mind worked, what were we up against regarding instincts. And then looking at biomechanics was, how does the body work? How is it going to function most efficiently? What makes it comfortable? What makes it athletic? What keeps the horse sound? What makes me a better rider, right? Because it was never lack of effort, but the frustration with different teachers who weren't of that same mind was they were always trying to either sell me something or they would want to do it for me. And I'm like, no. I want to learn how it works. So the teachers I did best with were teachers who thought the same way. They were going to explain to me why the horse was doing what it was doing, right? Or improve my riding by looking at not my lack of effort or inherent talent, but how I could differently use my body or find a better organization and use with what I already had. And I think that's a whole category of students and teachers that are mechanically minded, so to speak, and they just want to know how things work. And that's really what this podcast is for. Right. So in thinking about it, I go, there is a place for the instructors who are very good at fulfilling the rider's needs. I would call them the group of concierge. They're going to get you what you want, right? And you don't have to think about it too much. And they're experienced. They're very, very high ranking in the horse world. And so there's a certain status with getting something procured, so to speak, for the rider and the horse, even riding the horse so that the owner only has to show up and get the blue ribbon, right? Which is best matched with a student who really likes the glamour or the status or the idea of riding, but isn't all that interested in how things work.
Exactly.
And I go, that's a really good match when you have the right student with the right instructor. Right? Or you have people who are just focused on becoming good riders and good jockeys, and they don't really want to go into the depths of how things work or improve the horse themselves. They want a good horse. They want the right saddle for the job. They want to focus on themselves. Maybe they compete, maybe they don't. Some trail riders just want the right horse and can enjoy the trail. Right? They don't want to mess with problems. They don't want to mess with learning all of this stuff that mechanics like to learn. And so having a trainer who's more geared to selling them the right equipment, selling them the right horse, I go, that's a good match. Mm-hmm. You know, and I go, there's a place for everybody. It's just, we have to know ourselves, whether we're a student or you and I are both working professionals, we have to know when somebody comes along that, yes, this is my area of interest. This is what I can share with you. But if you're looking for me to sell you the right piece of equipment that will make you successful or do the job for you, that's not who I am as a working professional. And I learned over time that if I did try to adapt to those students who weren't looking for what I was best at, it was kind of miserable for both of us.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
It was a
And I see the same thing with human bodies. You know, there's some people that just want to be fixed. And then there's others that really want to know how to fix themselves or how to help themselves. Mm-hmm. And those, of course, are for an Alexander teacher, ones who want to learn and go forward and have the best use of their own bodies and be able to teach themselves. Those are a match for me.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, even just sort of, I guess, knowing whether that particular teacher And there's nothing wrong. Like, I didn't blame the people who tried to sell me a new horse after many years, because at first it made me really mad. But then I came to understand that's not their deal. Their right. deal was to get a good young rider on the right horse, get to the show. That was their deal. And as long as I wanted to fix my own horse, I was frustrating them and they were frustrating me. And it wasn't working. And so it wasn't anything against them. It just wasn't what I wanted as a student. And it was hard to find. I have to say, I don't even want to say how many years or decades it was ago, but it was hard to find what I was looking for. And a lot of the, in the horse world, a lot of the people who are very good mechanics aren't necessarily good with people. If they're good That's horse true. Mechanics, they tend to be a little bit introverted or antisocial. I get it. And they're maybe not patient or good teachers, but you have to stick with them if that's what you want. Because they can't always explain it, because a really, really good rider comes out of the place of having to think and act. And they're either born with the intuition to ride well, or it becomes intuitive at a certain point, and there's not a lot of words to express it.
Yeah.
Which kind of brings us back full circle. I can, you know, people just glom onto these phrases rather than changing their vocabulary. They glom onto these phrases like heels down, shoulders back, more leg, you know, those kind of things, because what that means to an excellent rider, or keep your weight equal in the stirrups, sit in the middle of the saddle. Well, a beginner rider is going to take that quite literally, where a really advanced rider saying the same words means, well, don't let the horse push up on one seat bone. Keep your legs the same length, which means don't get tipped side to side by the rotation in the horse's spine and barrel. But the words are just saying, stay even. Well, what does that mean?
Exactly. And if you don't know in your own body, if you haven't become aware of, you know, is your body, how to use your own body, what's the information that you're transmitting to your horse? There could be a level of confusion there. If you're stuck not only in those words, you don't understand how to interpret the information, but you don't know how to communicate with your own body.
Right. Or the classic shoulders back. I go, shoulders back is great, perfect instruction for the male body. Mm-hmm. But men and women have different shaped lumbar, different shaped pelvis, different musculature in the core. And so shoulders back is one of the most debilitating instructions for female riders, because it makes them arch the lumbar and tip the pelvis forward.
I have a picture in my head of myself in the show ring. I was maybe 9 years old, and that was the exact picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I arched back, sticking out my chest. My arms are all stiff. I have these long pigtails.
Yeah. And I struggled for years to advance my riding at learning to straighten my lumbar, because as a jump rider, as a kid, shoulders back was really drilled into you. And so I had this horrible arch through my low back that was disconnecting my seat from the saddle and really not being able to feel the horse accurately. And shoulders back for men actually stabilizes the lumbar and the pelvis if they open through the thoracic. But for women, it destabilizes our lumbar. But nobody.
And yeah, and it actually, if you just think of what happens in the rotation of the human pelvis, because they kept telling me, can't you feel your seat bones on the saddle? And with that much of an arched back, there was no way I could possibly.
Yeah, you can't.
It's like, what are my seat bones? Where are they?
Yeah, they're pointed at the top of the horse's tail is where they are.
So, and I was out riding yesterday and I was kind of watching my shadow and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's even with all the knowledge I have, I will go to that habit. I will go there. That's a very strong habit that I have to constantly look at myself and look at ways of working around that and fixing it. So it, you know, there's no right or wrong. There's no, oh, I'll finally find the end. It's a continual, like you said, it's a perpetual thing of learning.
Absolutely. No, and then the kind of last point I just wanted to bring up was thinking of our relationship with our horses as it is a relationship of a student and teacher. So like I will be out teaching sometimes. And as a teacher, I got to say, I learn from every student. Mm-hmm. They force me to go into sort of the archives of information in my head. And one of the most challenging things as a riding instructor or horse trainer is to see how my words land. Can they act out? Can they make the adjustment? Can they sense it through the words I'm using? And if not, I have to change my words. Now, I only learn to do that as a teacher from human to human by learning that from the horses. So instead of thinking of my horse as disobedient, or having some kind of personality flaw, lazy, stupid, ADD, whatever, I had to look at, as a rider, it's a nonverbal communication, but it's communication. So every different amount of pressure on an aid or how I use my body are words that I'm speaking to the horse. And as I realized that, I went, oh, half the time I might not even know what I'm saying. I'm just throwing out gibberish to my horse, expecting a different result, right? Maybe
or you could be giving him your grocery list or your to-do list. And the horse is going, what are you saying?
So I learned through riding and working with horses that instead of yelling louder, which means getting harder, going to more leverage, I had to think about, could I choose different words? Could I, if I look at my horse as my student and I'm trying to teach the horse either how to be ridden, starting a green horse, or do dressage or do jumping or go on a trail ride, I have to educate the horse how to go about doing that because they're not born knowing how to do it. Right. So if I think of my horse as a student, which was my first breakthrough, I went, oh, how could I explain this differently? Mm-hmm. Changing my feel, my timing, altering my balance, maybe even changing my strategy, maybe changing my technique, maybe going to the ground where I thought I could do it riding, or going to the saddle where I thought I needed to do it on the ground. And so really thinking of the horse as your student and you, the rider, are the teacher, it really kind of got the frustration out of the mix. Instead of going, why isn't this horse doing what I want? Which is again, what we're talking about between a human teacher and a human student. Why don't they get it?
And you don't they get what I'm, yeah. And that's where I have to go back and ask myself, am I, number one, seeing or feeling what I think I am? Or do I need more information from the student, horse, person, to make a better evaluation of what's really going on? Because as you and I well know, it's another podcast topic, is that you may have a lameness in a limb, whether it's a horse or a human, but that might not be the cause. That's just the symptom. So what I usually do is if I can't get the communication across to the horse or the rider, it's I have to ask the student for more information.
Right. And that's exactly what communication is. It's not asserting our idea as a teacher only one way, whether that means you're the teacher of your horse as a rider or you're a professional riding instructor and teacher. We might say it in a way that makes perfect sense to us, but it makes no sense to the recipient of the information. And so the challenge is, if we're the provider of information, maybe we're the one that needs to change until it's understood, which is a little bit like just throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks, right? You just try stuff and you see what sticks, or getting more information from the students so that you have a better understanding of how to craft your communication, whether it's verbal communication or words. And then also being open, like as a teacher, being receptive, that you're not the authority with all the information. I think that's a concept that we all get stuck in, but that it's a reciprocation of information.
That's a really good point, because I wonder what the because I used to be a lead instructor at a massage school, and the students always seem to think I should know it all.
Yeah, that can be the pressure on a professional.
Yeah. And I would look at them and say, Google it. I don't know the answer. Look it up.
Such a good point. Able to be honest and say, because there is a certain amount of pressure. You're getting paid as the professional, as the provider of information. There's a lot of pressure to know the answer to everything. But be with horses from the moment you're born till the day you die, and nobody is going to know everything there is to know. It's very complicated with millions of potentials. So as a professional, I think it takes a whole lot of self-confidence to get to the place to say, I don't know the answer to that question.
Let's try something different, or ask the student, do you have an idea?
Yeah, let's see how it works.
Yeah.
It's so funny, the student-teacher relationship, it reminds me of, I think it was that comedian George Carlin, who used to say, when you're driving, everybody going faster than you is an idiot. Oh, is a maniac. And everybody going slower than you is an idiot.
And that's a really good point, is to be being comfortable where you're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comfortable where you're at. Finding the right teacher, sort of knowing, do I want a concierge so I don't have to think about it and I've got the money to do it? I want the status, I want the ribbon, I want it for this. Am I just focused on myself, which makes me a jockey, and I need a good salesperson who's going to send me the right products to get me where I want to go? Or am I a mechanic? Am I really curious about how it works with my horse, how my horse works, how I work? And then it takes so much stress out of the relationship. So instead of the teacher, so sort of going, that student's a maniac or that student's an idiot. Or the student going, this teacher is a maniac and that teacher is an idiot. That's just our perspective, because we're not in the right lane.
Right.
Right? We're just not at the right, we're not with a compatible frequency, I guess, or speed, rate, whatever you want to say. But that George Carlin thing made me laugh, because that's really the essence behind the tension when it comes between horse and rider or student teacher, is we only have our perspective.
Right.
Right. So we have to get a little bit into the skin of the other person, and that only comes from being the student in the moment. Give me more information about yourself before you label them as a maniac or an idiot. Whether it's a horse or a human doesn't matter. Right. Mm-hmm. But you go, maybe I need more information to understand their perspective in order to adapt my communication. That would be ideal, even if we can't always do it. That would be sort of the dynamic that would actually work.
Right. Yeah. And I sometimes will, you know, just, and that's another thing about, can the horse be the teacher?
Oh, has to be.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a big shift for some people to think of the horse as inferior to human. I go, I think they're different. They definitely don't have the advanced brain system that we have, but they have a natural intelligence that is the intelligence of nature. I go, you can't really get away from that. It doesn't mean they're stupid if they don't understand. Just
exactly.
Like a human. It doesn't speak to their innate intelligence if they don't understand what's being communicated to them in a way that makes sense to them. And it's so easy to start labeling your students as kind of dumb. I go, I see a lot of horse trainers do that, but I go, look, just because an adult beginner doesn't know a lot about horses doesn't speak to their intelligence at all, because obviously they're doing well enough they can afford to buy a horse. So they're not stupid. They've made the rest of their life work. They might not know much about horses. That's why I'm here to help them, right? But it doesn't mean that they're not intelligent people. And many of them are professionals, like doctors, lawyers, nurses, therapists, whatever. I go, they're highly intelligent people, even if the horse makes a monkey out of them for the first year of ownership. And so, yes, we have to learn from the horse too, because the horse is always telling us this works for me or this doesn't.
Yeah, and it goes into, maybe a point you're trying to get across right now is not the appropriate timing, but maybe 6 months or a week from now, it'll make sense if you reintroduce it.
Right.
So always asking the student the question, is this working for you? Is this working for you?
Right.
You know, and maybe not verbally, but you can certainly see it in the way the horse is responding or the human's responding. Or do I need, you know, as the teacher, do I need to change it?
Right. Right. And maybe the information isn't even inherently wrong. There's nothing wrong with the information itself, but it can be applied at inappropriate times. I think that's really good point.
Yeah, it's you know, the difference between, I know I homeschooled my kids. My son could not get algebra. He just couldn't get it. He just, geometry, no problem. Algebra, forget it. And my daughter, algebra was fine. Geometry, no. So, you know, there's that, the way of learning, the way a horse learns, the way a human learns, it's all different.
Right. No, and part of what I think attracts people to horses in the first place is we tend to be what's called kinesthetic learners. So we learn through, there's audio, visual, and kinesthetic touch. So sound, sight, touch. And people who do really well in school have a high rate of auditory learning. They can learn from words. Then there's visual learners, which is probably the strongest. They can see it, do it, right? So visual learning is very important. But people attracted to horses also tend to have a strong kinesthetic ability to learn. And we didn't use our kinesthetic learning abilities in regular school since kindergarten, right? When we played with blocks, that was the last time we did kinesthetic learning in a regular school. So adult beginners have to reawaken. It's in there because they wouldn't be attracted to horses in the first place. But making that nonverbal feel, touch, sensation start to make sense as a language. I go, that's really what all horse trainers are trying to help all students with. is that translation of feel into actual communication.
Yeah, and I know we've had some conversations around, you know, and it's all coming out in the new scientific information about we're all just energy. We're all just putting out certain frequencies and energies, and how do we use those, where, and timing and feel. It, you know, and it really is, once you get a knowledge base around that, the kinesthetics flows a lot easier.
Yes. But that is a conversation for a whole nother day.
Another day. A whole nother day. So.
But anything you want to add? I think we could wrap it up there. It's really just about the teacher-student balance. Instead of thinking of teacher-student as a hierarchy,
yeah.
I think it's important to think of teacher-student as a cycle. And especially with horses, because the most masterful horsemen I have ever worked with, and usually they're over 70, takes a long time to get really good. Things are very simple, and truly masterful horsemen become very humble, because you realize none of us are ever going to know all there is to know.
Yeah.
You become a perpetual student the longer you're with horses.
Completely agree with that.
Okay, so shall we sign off there?
Yes.
Okay.
Be kind, everybody.